Welcome back to Time with Attackers. This week we've got Mike McGinnis of Innovative Tuning and now of Co-op Tuning. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me.
Where, you know, all the stuff that you've been involved with over the years is just cool. And, you know, when Chris and I said about getting the podcast back going again, I was like, man, we got to have Mike. You know, been tuning all kinds of different race cars and track cars and stuff for years. Now with the R35 Time Attack car, which is like probably one of the craziest balances of really good street car and really fast track car. And with Voltron and all of your other projects, I mean, you've just been involved with so much stuff. We both kind of thought that, you know, it was a must have to have you on. So we really appreciate you coming on and tell us a little bit about your background of, you know, tuning at Innovative Tuning and then transitioning into Cobb.
Right on. Well, thanks so much for having me. Obviously, I missed you guys. It's great to talk to you. And let's get into it. So I was always into cars, but grew up in Manhattan and didn't really have a car. Cars weren't around. So got my first car a little later on than maybe some people.
How old were you, if you don't mind me asking, when you got your first car?
Sure. Let's see. I guess 18. So yeah. Not super late.
But still, most car guys are like at 16. They're like, what am I going to buy?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. So, and honestly, I was super into bicycling at the time. I worked at a bicycle shop and I spent all my money on that. So the car got no love except for a stereo system. And that was it until finished school. And got a pretty good paying job, nothing exciting, but I was making some money, and got a Subaru WRX when they first came out. And that's kind of what really got the ball rolling. I had been watching some WRC on late night TV, and I was super pumped when that car came out. And as soon as I got it, that was really a big change in my life, to be honest. I had gone to school for information technology. I was super sure that's what I wanted to do since I was probably in middle school. Cars were just really exciting. Found my passion there and became friends with a gentleman that ran a company called Z1 Auto in Long Island. And helped him with his website, where he was selling some Subaru parts, and with him and really saw that there might be some potential for me to develop my work around this passion that I had. And then I realized when it came time to get my car tuned, was living in Western New York, and there really just wasn't anybody who knew how to do it. And I was faced with, you know, do I go to New Jersey? Do I go to Canada, try to get this car tuned? And then am I really going to do that every time I change a part on the car? I'm a computer guy. Let me see if I can figure this out. So spent a whole lot of time researching, reading, probably about a year before I even touched anything, because I was so terrified to ruin this massive money that I spent. Basically eventually, you know, got the courage up to start making small changes really carefully, and eventually got it running pretty good. And some friends of mine who were trying to get their cars running better asked me for help, and one thing led to another. A few years later, in 2004, I started a shop. So that was it.
No kidding. I didn't realize it had been around for that long. I knew it had been around for quite a while before, you know, you first came to CSCS and stuff like that. But that's quite a few years ago now that you started that.
Yeah, 04. And I had done a bunch of autocross. I had done some rallycross, some winter time speed distance rallies. But I didn't actually do a track day until, I believe it was 05 or 06. It was actually at Dunnville before that place got closed down.
No kidding.
And man, I had a blast. That was it for me. I knew that's where I wanted to be.
Well, and from Buffalo to Dunnville, that would have been, you know, that's even closer than TMP, I believe, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was like an hour door to door. And at the time, I want to say there was like an evening, some weekday or something where you could just go up there and it was super cheap. And there was a group called MY Speed, which was a forum. Of course, forums were super popular at the time, not so much anymore, but great bunch of people there. And they started putting together track days there. So went up there a few times and then made my way over to TMP and eventually to Watkins Glen and some other places after that.
I went to my first track day at Dunnville, which was my, I guess, second track day ever in one of my own cars. I had been out with my uncle before that, but it was my second track day ever in my own car. And we got there late. My dad and I went. My dad and I were co-driving quite a bit back then. And it was like you say, it was some crazy cheap price. Like I think it was $40 for the evening or something crazy like that. And then normally we would each pay, but we got there a bit late, and they're like, ah, just $40 for both of you is just fine. And I'm thinking, what's this even real? But they just figured, we weren't going to be on that much anyways. And that it was a my old EG hatch with a B18C type R motor in it, and we like just hot lapped that for the rest of the night. Like our laps per dollar ratio was it was obscene. But no,
That's
that was
funny too,
awesome.
because so many people I know got their start at that track. And even myself, my uncle was the caterer for that. They had like a catering contract with the track. And so he knew the owner. And we used to get to go there, myself and Tony and a few other people. We would just go there like on the weekends and basically have a run mill of the track. And so we did a lot of like track and lapping days there and even got to like drive some of the little formula cars that they had that were like Dodge Neon motors and but basically still like a Ford, like almost like a Formula Ford. And it was just like it was such an awesome place. And then they got shut down. And then basically that was kind of like the end of it. But it's funny how many people actually wound up getting their start there. Like it wasn't the best track, but it was pretty fun. It had a decent layout.
The sad part about this is, and I'm all for making fun of people that need to be made fun of sometimes, but I think there was like one particular house there that was really close proximity, and this lady would always, I think it was a lady, I can't remember, but the person would always call and complain. And these people would almost make fun of her and stuff and like answer the phone while revving engines and stuff like that. And it's sad because, as funny as it is to kind of make fun of a situation, be like, yeah, we'll quiet it down a little bit and do a burnout. I think that that kind of led to, some of those families like going hard to try to get that place shut down, and it's a shame because it was such a cool place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, maybe gone a little too far there. The thing that still bugs me about it is, for those who don't know, the track was on the property of an active airport. This was not a place that was super quiet and suddenly became noisy. And obviously, it's a different kind of noise, I guess, if you're hearing tires screaming versus an airplane taking off. But to me, it's like, hey, you live next to an airport, there's going to be noise. Get over it.
And it had been
So,
an airport since World War II. It wasn't like a new thing.
right. Yeah, so that was really unfortunate. But like you guys said, one of the coolest things about that track and really for the most part, TMP as well, is it's a lot more relaxed than the tracks that most people go to. And some people may say that there's some safety concerns on some level because of that, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a ton of fun to go to a track where you feel like you can just go have a good time and nobody's being a hard ass. And you go on and off the track as you please. There's a tons of cars on the track. Maybe you just wait a few minutes and then you go out. But it was just really cool to have that freedom. And when you're out there with your friends, you felt like it was just your hangout spot. It wasn't like going to this big corporate thing with all these rules and like your typical big racetrack.
I remember the lack of a front pit wall there allowed you to, if you were kind of standing there just watching. I remember the one day, people were just standing like so close to the front straight there, and the cars are ripping by, 110 miles an hour or whatever they would be on the front straight there. We're standing like 30, 40 feet from that. And I was like, this is probably bad. There's no point moving, though, because what's the difference if I'm 30 feet away or 50 feet away anyways? If it goes wrong, it's going to go very wrong.
Right. Yeah.
No, that was a cool place. So, I mean, I guess I met you probably kind of started knowing of you the first time when you brought that Mustang that you had to a CSCS Time Attack event. But you only brought that a couple of times. And then you got into, you brought the Voltron car out, which, I think, you know, kind of, I don't know what people were expecting at the start, because like, as you had said before, you know, it wasn't maybe the prettiest when it first came out, but that car had the record there for a very long time.
Yeah. So the Mustang happened out of one of those really goofy, like, brain tricks we try to play on ourselves, where we're like, man, you know, my real track car needs a bunch of time and expensive stuff. So why don't I just get this other cheap car and I won't spend a lot of money on it. And then I'll drive that for a while and then I'll go back to the other one. And then of course the Mustang spiraled totally out of control. And, well, yeah, you've seen it. But anyhow, I bought the car for $300 and I was like, hey, I'll put some basic suspension and brakes on it. I'll go have some fun. And then, you know, then it's a bare shell and here we go. But,
and that was a turbo four cylinder. Did it come as an original SVO?
No. So, so the car was a Fox body. It was an 87 hatchback T-top car, probably the last of those types of chassis configurations that you'd want to race in, but that's what it was. And then it had the SVO four cylinder turbo from an 83 SVO Mustang. Apparently those are not really known for making a bunch of power, but had it up, you know, around 600. And I think the car weighed, I want to say 2,100 pounds.
I remember that thing was really,
there was literally nothing there. Yeah, so extremely light, decent amount of power for the time, and you know,
torsional rigidity though with that chassis and that
none
was just yep. No,
definitely none.
What was your torsional rigidity? No.
Yes, definitely no. But man, that thing was fun. Yeah, so drove that for a little bit, and then realized that it was a terrible, terrible mistake, and got back to the Subaru. So I had bought the Subaru stock in 05 or 06. It was the absolute base model that Subaru sold, a 96 model year car. I think they had like 100 horse. It was a 1.8 liter, no sunroof. So
some of those cars were even front wheel drive, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. Had it so basically, had I bought that model car, but it was either a 93 or 94, it would have been front wheel drives.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, so that was their bare bones car. I actually flew to New Hampshire, bought it from a dealership for $900. And the only thing I had asked them was, can you somebody like test drive it for a day before I come out there and make sure the head gasket isn't blown or something? Cause I need to drive it all the way back to Buffalo. And the guy drove it. He's like, yeah, it's good. And then I flew out there, turned out to be in the middle of a terrible, terrible blizzard. And
of course,
so I get there like midnight, nobody's there. They've just left the key. And I think, I think I made it maybe 15 or 20 minutes before the thing started overheating and the head gasket was blown. And that's, you know, 15, 20 minutes into a 7 hour drive on a normal day and a blizzard, a lot more than that. So I think I went through about 25 gallons of water that I bought at convenience stores along the way just to keep it alive to get it home. And it made it. I'm forever grateful for that. And hey, that's all it needed to do. All it needed to do was get back to the shop, because I was never going to drive it on that motor again anyway.
It's too bad you didn't just have like a drum of water with like a drip.
Yeah, right.
Dripping
in. I had plenty of heat though in the blizzard, so that was good. And it was nice and hot.
That is a hell of a story. Of course it was a blizzard.
Yeah, of course.
Of course it was New Hampshire, and of course it was overheating.
Yep. So yeah, $900 car. That's how it all started. And obviously there's pretty much hardly anything left of it at this point. The funny thing is it actually has most of the original body panels. Even the hood is still the steel hood. We just cut it up for vents and stuff. So eventually it'll get some composite stuff and drop some weight. But yeah, I mean, when we first brought the car out to CSCS, I had already gone through a few different setups on it. I think the first setup was I swapped the engine over from one of my early 90s Subaru Legacy Turbos, which was a 2.2 liter turbo car. And I had a GT35R Garrett turbo on it and was running, I want to say 33 pounds of boost with no intercooler, running methanol on it. And the fun thing about that was the car looked totally stock, no intercooler, you know, looks like the super slow car, and definitely had fun with people on the street and that thing. But that was the setup in it when I first took it to Dunnville. So I don't know, it's probably,
that's rowdy,
probably 500 wheel and a car that didn't really have the suspension and brakes for it. So good times.
I always found it interesting. You were not really interested in doing what necessarily other people always did with your builds. You know, you just came at things with your own ideas, and that's really cool because there's, you know, so much cookie cutter stuff out there. And I applaud people that do cookie cutter builds. I think that more people should, because if you don't have a shop and if you don't tune yourself, it's, you know, you would probably as a tuner recommend someone to do something, you know, very simple and normal. But, you know, for the people that have the means like what you had, I think that that's super cool to experiment with no intercooler and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, for better or worse, one of my driving motivations in any of these weird projects I do is I'm trying to learn something new, see if it works. And you know, like you said, there are probably ways that I could have gone about things that would have saved me some time and headaches, but had a lot of fun and learned a lot along the way. So it was all worth it.
Well, and throughout all this, you know, here you are with your shop and, you know, tuning a lot of cars. And I'm sure that, you know, you were very good right from the beginning, but you were probably learning a ton throughout all of this that was trickling down into just your regular, you know, customer builds and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I decided very early on was to keep myself out of trouble. I needed to just never try anything new on a customer car. I've got to play with it on my own car and figure it out. And I think that's a pitfall that it's very easy to fall into, especially early on in a new shop when you're, you know, you want to make the customer happy, you want to do what they want, and certainly trying to keep the doors open at that point. But I was, maybe it's just because I'm a bit paranoid, but I was always just scared I was going to blow somebody's stuff up. So had to try it first on my own, no matter how wild or crazy it was. And that's why the car went through so many different setups over time. But by the time it made it to CSCS, we had put an STI motor and tranny in it, full STI drivetrain actually. And I don't remember what suspension stuff was on it. Pretty sure it had full STI brakes, which aren't really great. We ended up developing our own brake kit because that wasn't working so hot. But
I remember that with the Corvette calipers.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And that worked out awesome. Solved all our braking problems, and braking ended up being probably the strongest aspect of that car's performance at the end. But yeah, the first time it shows up to CSCS, it was definitely a incomplete project. And yeah, talking to the guys that ran the event, they definitely said, you know, hey, this is cool, but like, you need to bring a whole car next time because you know, people are taking pictures of cars here and we're trying to put on a nice event and this is not really what we're going for. So
don't bring
I remember
the car
we were talking about it before. I remember because you pitted beside us and I didn't really know much about you at that time. I knew about some of the drag racing stuff that you guys had done. And I remember you pulled in and I saw you guys unload. And I'm like, where the hell's the rest of your car? And then I watched you go on track and I'm like, oh crap, man, this thing is unbelievably fast. Maybe there's something, maybe he's onto something. Maybe we should start taking some of these cars off the car.
Man, it was a combination of trying to just get the car to the track, trying to be cheap and trying to save weight. And obviously the car ended up looking a little nicer as time went on, but it was never a beauty queen. And that's just kind of comes back to my priorities. I always wanted the car to work first and look nice second. But I think with the GTR, I tried not to hack it up and make it an ugly duckling.
You're kind of the polar opposite, you know, with that GTR now. It's, you know, the kind of whatever wide body, there's some sort of wide body on there, but you wouldn't even hardly know because it's so OEM looking. And, you know, you'd hardly suspect anything of that car, you know, rolling along the street. And then, you know, you read about it in Motorola IQ, makes over 1,000 wheel, has great suspension and everything like that. And, you know, still, I know you were still like working some bugs out of it at COTA, and it goes, it went 220 or 219, somewhere around there.
219, yeah. 219 on a DOT tire, and basically, I drive the car on that tire on the street. So that's literally just the way I drive the car on the road is how I drove it on the track.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
And what kind of mile an hour were you hitting on the straightaway?
So I had one lap at 176 when I turned the power up a bit. Most laps were like 174. I never ran full power because I didn't quite have the tune dialed in yet. Don't tell anybody, but I had a laptop in the car making adjustments a few times around. I was literally street tuning at the track because, I mean, everything was just kind of last minute. It had some delays and hiccups with the build, but pretty much
a time attacker would never know about last minute.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, the car's coming along. Obviously I've got it running better now. Still some suspension stuff that I want to keep working on to get the car handling a little better, and some braking stuff. I just got some brake scoops for it. So a little more brakes, a little more suspension. And I think that car might actually be a contender in limited class, even though it's my street car, which is pretty wild.
I mean, considering how fast we've gone already, I would say, you know, with a car that doesn't have a, you know, tune all the way, you know, you have a laptop sitting there to be able to go 219. I think you definitely have a contender. And I mean, it's still like factory interior, like it probably weighs like close to 4,000 pounds. Right?
Yeah, it's I think it was like 4046 for that event. It's definitely not a lightweight. The only stuff that's been removed was moved out of the way to put the required cage in, which the cage weighed like five times what the foam seat pads and stuff that I took out weighed. So the car actually got heavier this year than it was last year. But yeah, everything in front of the seats is all stock. I can run the AC while I'm at a track day, which is awesome. Yeah. So, hey, it's my street car, and I know that I'm definitely giving up some lap time, but this whole project for me has been just kind of to see what I can do in a car that's still nice to start, drive, go to the store, but also can do something at the drag strip and a time attack. So haven't really seen what it can do on the setup at the drag strip yet. My old stock engine setup on it went 9.4 at 147, I think.
Oh, wow.
So I'm expecting it to go eights now, which to me still kind of blows my mind that that's, I mean, realistically these days, that's not even that crazy. just how far everything has come since I got into this hobby. I mean, when I got my WRX and it ran 12s, I thought that was pretty cool. And now, you know, if you're not running 7s, you're slow. So pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty wild. So your day job is at Cobb. I'm assuming the DTR is also running a Cobb. So are you doing, like, are you learning things on the track at the drag strip and then kind of reapplying those into the development of the product, or
Sure. Yeah. So on the GTR, we actually used my car to test a few features. We came out with a CAN bus integrated flex fuel system about a year or two ago now, which allows you to add flex fuel to the car without hijacking factory sensors. It actually just plugs in and sends the data directly to the computer over the CAN bus, which is basically a world first in the aftermarket in terms of bringing data into a stock computer that way. So really cool project, and I was lucky enough to get to do some of that testing on my car. So one of the things we did actually was some track testing to see how the module and the sensor held up when everything got really hot in the engine bay. So yeah, absolutely. The track's always a great place to learn. For whether it's positive or negative, you usually learn something every time you go. And I always try to just keep going, keep learning, and bring that knowledge, you know, into what I do at Cobb and what I do in my own tuning, and certainly on my own car as well.
Yeah, I'm blown away by what you can actually do with the Cobb on the GTRs. One of my friends has a GTR here locally, and, you know, they're making, I think, 1,800 or 1,900 wheel horsepower in it. And, you know, they're using the Cobb, and they have the traction control stuff, you know, set up, and that works really well. And it, you know, there's lots of people who have, you know, higher end motorsports grade ECUs in some of those faster GTRs. But they have, you know, lots of trouble with those too. And there's a lot of finicky little details that you kind of have to work through, where the Cobb stuff just kind of seems to work and gets you, you know, a lot of bang for your buck, really, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think really pluses and minuses to everything, of course, you know. And like you said, Cobb really tries to focus on making everything easy and everything just works. And, you know, that's from the product to the software to customer service, just the whole package. That's kind of their big thing. And on the GTR, English Racing went 7s on the stock computer, now it seems like forever ago. It was probably 6 years ago or something. And I think that really opened a lot of people's eyes. You know, sometimes we forget just how powerful a sensor is. What's really the limitation most of the time is the ability of the people working on the software to create the custom features that do all that cool stuff. And I think Cobb goes deeper into that than most aftermarket tuners that deal with stock computers. Usually the focus of most companies is just exposing what's already there and giving people the ability to make adjustments, get the car to run well. But the Cobb custom features definitely sets them apart. And I'm actually working on some really cool stuff for both Mazda and Subaru right now, where we're just completely changing the way factory stuff works. And pretty excited that we're able to do that. And hopefully I'll be able to talk about that stuff soon.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I actually use a combination of different things on that car. I actually have a Motec dash logger in the car. I can actually data log the Cobb access port and the Motec dash at the same time. So if I want to get all my lap times and maybe some extra sensors and whatnot, I actually have them both talking to the car over the CAN bus, both recording data. And then I can put it all together. I'm using a little bit of stock ECU, a little bit of aftermarket, and sometimes I do standalone stuff as well. Really kind of depends on the needs of the project and whatnot.
I think that people maybe don't realize how afraid that they should have been of your car at Coda this year. Because, you know, to think of how fast that car was going with a laptop in the car still, and, you know, the potential of that thing, if it, you know, you if you could really get it wound up on full power and stuff like that, turning a few laps, I can't even imagine where that thing could go lap time wise.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Obviously, I looked at all my data after the fact, and anytime you do that, you're both really excited and really disappointed. Because it's like, yeah. Oh man, just these couple little things and I could have won today. But you know, at the end of the day, you got to put it all together. It's got to be ready. And, I just didn't have the car ready, but, certainly excited about what I'll be able to do next time out. Like I said, I'm doing some stuff with the brakes. I've got the cartoon now. I can run full power. I'm also going to change up my coilovers to something else. Which mine were working pretty darn well, but I think this will give me just a little more, and hopefully I can just put together a lap. I'd love to be down in the 16s or 17s on a DOT tire. That's what's going to make me happy, but we'll see what happens.
It's a shame too with, you know, anytime you go with a spec tire, you're going to have some limitations. And I think that if that car was on the, you know, 27 or 28 inch tire that it belongs on versus the 25.3, whatever, 25.4, the 315 that you're using, I imagine that would make it a lot easier to kind of work as well, because it's probably, you know, kind of overloaded for the
it is tire. Yeah, so that car comes stock with a 28 inch tire, so I'm down a couple inches, and it requires me to do a couple odd things. I basically have to monster truck the ride height of the car on the suspension just to keep the body from dragging on the ground, because the tire is so short. So it's kind of an odd thing for suspension geometry. And then, like you said, just being a small tire, it is a 315, and for a 315, it's actually quite wide. But because the tire's so short, the overall contact patch, when you're looking at it both longitudinally and laterally combined, the rears are actually smaller than the stock tire that the car comes with. So very, very small for that car. And because of the weight and the power, and obviously I drive pretty aggressively, they get overheated real fast. So it's tough to get through a lap. I will say that the Yokohama tire actually managed the heat way better than what I was running the year prior. So they didn't completely go to grease by the end of one lap, which was really nice. So they hold up surprisingly well considering what I'm doing to them, which they were really not meant for a car of that size. But yeah, I think if I had the exact same tire on my Subaru at, you know, 1,300 less pounds, and it's actually the correct size tire for that car, man, I wonder what that could do. So that gets me excited.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That, you know, I've always kind of paid attention to what Life have done with their GTR as well. And, you know, when you look at what it was able to do last year at that event on the normal tire that it runs on, like, I think the 310 or 320 710 tire, which is the 28 inch tall tire. And then when they go to World Time Attack, they have to use the 295 35 18, which I believe is 26.3 or something like that. And that car really struggles on that tire, and it's even an inch taller than yours. So I can just imagine, you know, trying to deal with something that's over 2.5 inches shorter. That's quite a feat. And I just wonder, did you think about using that tire that Ferris uses on his Corvette at all? I know it's a little bit narrower, but it is that 28 inch tall tire, the 285, 3520.
I did. Like, yeah, I definitely thought about it. I actually had a conversation with him about it before the event, and he actually bought two sets of tires and tested both on his car, and he felt more comfortable on the taller, skinnier tire. Now his car is more than 1,000 pounds lighter than mine. And at the time, I think he said he was making 600 something. So my thought was make sense for him. I'm not sure if it makes sense for me. The other thing was the factory wheels for the GTR are right around 50 pounds a wheel. And that's the only set of 20s I have. And I was thinking to myself, do I really want to buy a set of wheels that I'm literally never going to want to use for anything than this tire I have to use right now? So I think me just trying to save a buck is what made up my mind, because I already had 18s. So I gave it a shot. Hard to say which one would have been better. I think I probably made the right choice. I don't know. I certainly know that the car has a ton more in it on a slick that fills the car out and has the right height. I think I can get, if I remember right, about 40% more total contact patch on a proper size tire. Yeah. Oh, wow. So a massive amount. And then, of course, going from a DOT tire to a slick, there's a lot there too. So I will definitely get the car on a slick at some point. And I don't know what it's going to do, but it should be pretty cool.
I'm thinking down around that 210 range might not be unreasonable at all. I think that car will completely wake up on a tall, wide tire like that and really allow you.
You might be right, but I don't know. I won't make any guesses until I give it a shot.
Yeah. No, whatever it'll be, people will be shocked when it shows up at the track. You know, does its laps and leaves, and it's funny because if you would have been on, you know, something like that this year, it would have won the event overall.
Yeah, believe me, I was thinking maybe I screwed up as soon as I saw that. But
who would have expected life after that car just turned laps at World Time Attack without issue? You know, cars are amazing, but they are frustrating and a real struggle sometimes, because that, you know, those poor guys just struggled that whole weekend after having their, you know, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I came over briefly to try to help them out with it. And my buddy Roman from Boost Logic ended up helping them quite a lot that weekend, just trying to help them diagnose what was ultimately a series of electrical things going on with the car. And anytime you're dealing with electrical or sensors and whatnot, you know, one thing can lead to another, and it can just get difficult to really nail it all down. But it was really sad to see that happen to those guys. You know, obviously everybody was super excited to see what the car can do, and I'm sure they'll be back hopefully next year and really see what they can put down. Because even the year prior, I didn't get the feeling like they got everything out of the car when they ran that 207. So I think we're going to see more from them in the future.
Yeah, I mean, they had we were in the same garage as them last year. They had a brand new set of tires for Sunday morning that they didn't put on. You know, you never, I take it with a grain of salt when people say medium boost.
Sure.
You know, what's medium boost, right? Is it 2 pounds less than full? But regardless, I know Cole had said to me, you know, medium boost, and they had just ran the old tires. And they said that weekend they didn't even run it at the lower ride height that they normally run it at or anything. So, you know, I had said to Cole right before the event started, I'm like, you know, I'm expecting to see a 205 out of here. And he's like, you know, we're just looking to have a good weekend. And I think it's always the best, you know, attitude to go in with no expectations. But, you know, us time attackers, it's hard not to be bench racers. Sometimes you're always kind of curious to see, you know, where that sliding scale is going to move, because we had hoped at one point to have the Integra out there. And, you know, you're kind of wondering what you have to plan for the next year, right? If you're going to, you know, hope to shoot for the
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we always all want to go faster every time we come out, and maybe that's not the most realistic thing, but that's what we're going to try to do anyway. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about, man. I'd say one thing that's helped me a little bit has been just reminding myself that I'm out there in my street car. I think that takes my expectations down a little bit, so they're not quite as crazy as they might be otherwise. But at the end of the day, whether it's my street car or not, I want to try to win. So I certainly shouldn't be using that streetcar thing is an excuse. I wouldn't bring it out if I didn't think I could do well.
So tell us a little bit more about the GTR build itself. I mean, we know about, you know, that it's done some really fast laps and, you know, makes a lot of power and you're hoping for 8 second passes and stuff like that. But, you know, that car is really, really stock looking, but you've done a lot of work on that of, you know, engine and trans and turbo system. And I know you've tried a couple of different turbos on it this year already. Just maybe elaborate whatever. I know that you don't always like to share maybe everything about it, but share with us.
I mean, I don't really have too many secrets with the car. For a little bit, I did need to hold back a little bit of info just because there were some articles coming out, but we're past that now. So, cool. Last year when I ran the car, it was a stock engine and mostly stock transmission. On a GTR, you know, you've got your clutches in there. So those were upgraded, but most people don't think of clutch as a really big deal in terms of the scope of modifications on a race car. So I had clutches, engine was 100% stock, never been apart. And the car was running around 850 horse at full power. And the car ran a 220. And I was on some pretty ragged out tires, but that first year I came there with the car ready to go. I wasn't monkeying with it, and that was just what it had. So this year it was built motor, built tranny, switched to some Garrett turbos. I had tested the G3770 turbos, and then we tested the G3900s, which is same hot side, but with a higher output compressor side, and ended up that worked out great. I had made the switch based on some turbo shaft speed and exhaust back pressure data that I gathered on both turbos. And basically what I saw was that at least on my engine and my setup, the exhaust pressure wasn't super high. So I knew I could get a bigger compressor, flow a bit more air without overwhelming the exhaust side. So anyway, that's why I went up to the 900s, and they worked out awesome. I didn't have to push them hard to get the power I wanted on track. And you guys probably saw I put a video up, but they come on just instantly, and they make the car so easy to drive. So that's been awesome working with Garrett with those turbos. And then I work with the company Cosmic on the tranny stuff, and thankfully they understand the inner workings of that thing in and out. I haven't had to figure any of it out on my own. I literally just tell them what I want to be able to do, and they take care of it. So as much as I'm like in there nitty gritty, want to know everything about everything happening with the engine and tuning, when it comes to the tranny, I'm just like, guys, you just do your thing. So that's been great. Yeah, it just works.
That's so good.
Been working with Dodson on, I actually had a gear set that was a secret thing and is not anymore, but they had this really nice gear set for guys that were making like 2000 horse. Obviously a gear set to handle that is not cheap, and they wanted to come out with something for the guys who are making, you know, maybe let's say 1000, where stock gears are absolutely going to break, but they never want to make, let's say, 1600 plus. So they came out with this in-between gear set, which I've been running, and it's been working awesome. And now they're actually selling that. So that was really cool to get to test that for them, and just prove how nice that works. So got that in the tranny, and then been working with Boost Logic. They did all the engine stuff, and it's their turbo kit that the Garrett turbo's on. And then in terms of picking a lot of the other stuff, it was kind of a collaboration, talking with them, what their experience was. And then, of course, I had to try some of my own out-of-the-box ideas. So because I wanted the car to be a really well-rounded car that I want to get in and drive, I actually chose a really tiny cam for it, variation cam, which I don't know, Most people start at 272. They wouldn't even think of something smaller for a car that goes on the track. But I went with that and didn't do full porting on the heads. Decided what I wanted was a really big power band and something that idles like stock, starts like stock. Really nice to drive around town, good drivability. So all that worked out. I really only wanted 1100 wheel, which that sounds really saying that only 1100, you know, no big deal. But in the GTR world, that's not a crazy number. The car ended up making 1170. I actually just got a couple things I need to put it back on the dyno finally and turn it up. So it'll probably do a little over 1200. On the setup I have, I don't really need any more, so I don't plan on getting wild and breaking it, but it'll probably do 1200, and I think 1100 will be a good max for on the track.
That's wild. That's really, really good. And cooling and stuff like that on the track is
so reasonable at that point. I ended up doing a vent in the hood. And that made a nice difference. Like most vehicles, the pressure under the hood gets really high, especially at high speed. And venting the hood really helped get some air through the car. One of the choices I made, which is a little out of the box, was I have what's called the AMS intercooler on the car. So this intercooler was never meant for anywhere near this power level at all. But I didn't want to put one of the larger race intercoolers on and further block my, my radiator because, that was already kind of borderline on being able to manage the heat from all the power the car makes. So, what I chose to do is keep the street intercooler, work on the ducting, try to get a lot of airflow through it, and then just try to make my engine setup so efficient that the intercooler wouldn't have to do a ton of cooling. And then I also run a ethanol fuel that allows me to get away with intake temps being a little bit high. But to be honest, I was talking to Jensen with the Miata that runs an unlimited class, and his intake temps were like 80 degrees over mine. So what I consider within my comfort zone is actually pretty low. So that's all working really nicely. But yeah, that's just one of those kind of wonky choices I decided to make just to try to make the car meet my needs. But I know the guys at Boost Logic are looking at me like I'm a bit of an idiot for having that tiny intercooler on there, but it's working for me.
Because, you know, and you say keeping the turbo system cool to keep the IATs low, because I would think those two G3900s, you know, if you wanted to turn them right up for a drag scenario, would probably be willing to make a lot more.
Yeah, you know, one of the key things with the G-Series turbos is they're super efficient and they come on super quick. They spool amazing. But because of all the lightweight components chosen and whatnot, they have maximum shaft speeds, which are perhaps a little lower than what we're used to on like the GTX line of turbos. So even when I run them up to the shaft speed limit, they're still well within the efficiency range of the turbo. So, you know, I can use up the safe limit of those turbos by 32, 33 pounds of boost. And I guarantee if you wanted to, you could put 40 through it and make a ton of power, which would then probably suddenly make a whole bunch of heat. But I don't have any plan to run them any harder than I need to. So another thing that, like you said, is definitely helping me keep those intake temps under control.
Chris, we're listening very closely to that, trying to get as much information as we can here, right?
Well, I mean, I know for myself, right, like when we ran the GTX 3076, which was a fairly small turbo for us, you know, we were seeing shaft speeds of pretty consistently 160,000, which was over kind of where they wanted to see the level, but they were, it was capable of doing that consistently. And, you know, we were okay because we had a large enough intercooler that we were able to pull a lot of heat out of the system. But I mean, now with us switching to the G30-900, it was definitely a concern, you know, going back from a 35 back to a 30 to see whether it was going to be able to kind of make the same kind of power. But based on what you're saying, you know, I think we'll probably be more than okay. We've done a lot of the same things you've done where we've tried to, you know, the head's not ported as crazy as it could be. You know, we're trying to not oversaturate the turbo with exhaust flow and then basically choke the hot side. You know, so we'll see how it all kind of works out, but fingers crossed.
I mean, as long as you watch the shaft speed and keep it in check, you'll be good. One thing that I find sometimes throws people off a bit with the G series turbos is the naming convention. So, I mean, it's called the G30-900. And under certain circumstances, you could probably get 900 crank horsepower out of that compressor. But when you put the 900 with the G30 hot side and maybe not the biggest AR exhaust housing, you're definitely going to expect a lot less than that at a safe shaft speed. I think a lot of the time, if you're thinking about it in terms of like a GT or GTX Garrett turbo that you're used to, you can usually, I think, go up a size on the G series stuff, and more than likely it'll still spool, and you know, the transient response will probably still be as good, if not better, even though you've gone to a bigger turbo that you don't need to push as hard, that you'll have cooler intake temps with and all that. So it's really cool what they've done with that new line. And I like that they're selling it alongside the GTX still, so that depending on what someone's going for, whether they can monitor shaft speed or not, you know, they have all sorts of choices now. And also pretty cool that they let you mix and match. Like, you want this, you know, three different compressor options with all these hot side options, and you know, you can mix and match and throw the turbo together however you want to work best for your application.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, they even still have, you know, the GTW line, which is, again, is another variation. And even if you want to go all the way back to an old GT series, you still can, right? So, I mean, they have quite a large portfolio of
Something for everyone, definitely.
Yeah. I saw a post recently, and it would have been neat to know their shaft speed, because I saw an Audi, I don't know what model it was, but it was one of the five cylinder. Maybe it was an RS3 with the five cylinder motor in it. And it was on a G35 1050, which is the turbo that we're going to be using on the Integra. And they made like 985 wheel on it. And I was like, oh, wow, that thing is rowdy for a four wheel, you know, to be putting that through a four wheel drive system. I would imagine their shaft speed.
I have a feeling they were probably over it, but hey, that, you know, just goes to show you how much those turbos can put out. And I was kind of curious what you were going with, and the G35 1050 was going to be what I would suggest for your car. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to see what that can do.
Yeah, me too. We ran the 3582 most of the time. We had an 84 on there for a little bit, but that's a Gen 1 turbo, and the transient and the even just like initial spool up was just not there. But we really liked how the thing would carry power like another 1,000 RPMs. Like the 3582 was falling off before 8,000 RPMs. So I think that the G35 1050 will hopefully have spool characteristics as good or better than the 82, but you know, hopefully we'll be able to carry power like the 84 did. So we're really excited to
get I think it's going to do exactly what you're hoping for, so that's exciting. Hopefully at this point, I mean, you've got some pretty cool drivetrain stuff in your car and should be able to handle the power, right?
Yeah, well, the Quaife, the one thing that we were having issues with sometimes was the input shaft. So they have I don't know if I
okay.
There's an update coming. We'll just say that. So I don't know how much I'm supposed to talk about it, but there's some updates coming. So we're going to have that. And we're hoping for, you know, I don't expect anything to last forever. That gearbox is a tiny, tiny gearbox, you know, where it has to fit. Right. But you know, if we can have service intervals and, you know, kind of figure out where it needs to be, you know, when we have to pull it out and inspect things and maybe change a few parts and stuff like that, that's totally fine. You know, hopefully, you know, if we can get a few events at a time in without, you know, having to pull anything apart, that would be cool. And then if at that point, you know, it needs to come out for an inspection, big deal, right? We're talking crazy numbers, crazy power for such a tiny little setup. So, you know, just both engine and transmission and everything. So, you know, we're not going to try to rush into it. Last year we found that the car was, you know, it was like a very, very small percent faster at 8 or 8.10 on the full boost, basically on the 3582 than it was at 700. Like most tracks we went to, it was just very, very small difference between 7 and 8. So, you know, we'll probably not, like you have always, you know, kind of been with your car, you know, you're not going to just rush into the full power, but you know, when you start doing a session and not seeing the, you know, much more time improvements and stuff like that at X power.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I guess partly because I tune cars for a living and partly because it's probably one of the fastest and easiest ways to spend a bunch of money. I leave turning the power up to last always. If I feel like I haven't driven a lap well, or there's something else wrong with the car, I don't even bother turning the power up. I'll just save it for another day where I feel like it's worth giving it that last little bit. And that's probably bit me in the butt a few times where I could have said, you know what, the car's not working great today. It's just not handling well. But if I turn the boost up, maybe I could win. And I'll just be stubborn and be like, no, the car's not working. I'm not doing it. But honestly, I love seeing that you guys, like, you just send it every time. It's like, we're just going for it. I don't care if we're going to be up every night fixing a broken car. We're sending it. That's it. So I love seeing that.
Sometimes it's funny, you know, you're sometimes wanting to turn it up because you're afraid that it might,
sure,
know, have some sort of a failure even at lower power.
Yeah.
But that car was like magic at 700. 700 basically was at 24 pounds last year, I believe. And so that was like, we had our second highest boost setting was that. And then our highest boost setting was 28, which was 800. And that car was like magic. It didn't get hot at 700. The traction control was way easier. You know, it never broke any engine or gearbox parts or anything like that at that power level. It's probably we should have just taken the full power just out of the system completely. And I should have probably just driven better at 700. But, you know, when things finally are all working together, it's sometimes hard not to turn that last, put it to that last setting.
So now you know the trick, though. So basically what's going to happen to you this season is they're going to take that highest power setting and they're just going to tell you that it's
right, yeah,
800.
Yeah,
it's really going to be 700.
You know, or they're going to say that it's
800
and it's 985.
Yeah, or yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean,
no, if I get too complacent and enjoying that 700 too much, they'll probably turn the 700 into the 8 and the 8 into the 985.
That's where you need, right, the remote tuning capabilities, so they can just do it from the pits, and you don't even have a hand in what kind of power it's running. It's just like, nope, you're getting all of it. Sorry.
Yeah, they watch you on a good lap at COTA on the big monitor, and about halfway through, you're just like, oh wow,
yeah,
what was that? That felt good.
Every time I see, you know, I watch the stream from World Time Attack, and I see, you know, a lot of the teams now are using like the Motec remote telemetry, you know, functionality and stuff like that. And I see that and I'm just like, man, that would be so cool. Basically, you know, as a driver, now you don't even have to look at the dash. You just really have to just focus on driving. And your engineers, in the pit are basically going to do everything else for you, right? They're going to radio to you when something's about to go bad, or, you know, even I'm sure at some later date, they'll be able to make remote changes too. I know the capability's not there yet.
Yeah, sure, yeah, I think we're probably getting pretty close to that with all the new cellular stuff that's out. I mean, it used to be they were trying to do it over radio, which isn't the greatest, but with all the cellular stuff being so cheap now, I think that's coming soon. And
I mean, once sure. you have 5G everywhere, you know, it'll just be, you know, so easy to do that.
But then everyone will that's have it. Coronavirus because everyone will have
5G. We'll be eating bats and yeah.
Isn't that what I read on the internet these days?
I mean, Jimmy, I was going to say they could give you like a push to pass button for that last bit of power, but I knew you'd just be holding it all the way around the track anyway.
Yeah, there's no point in getting to get that hand fully on the steering wheel, right?
We'll do our
first session at 700. It'll feel good.
Oh, it's like
two will be at full power.
Well, and I've had it happen to me multiple times where, you know, because I've always kind of wanted to work my way up to that full power setting. And I can count, you know, at least four or five times where it's like I've gone out at lower power and then broken something. And, you're always kind of fighting that as a driver and as a time attack competitor. It's like, oh, do you go out on a safe tune or do you just go full send right off the bat? Because more than likely the car is going to break anyway, right? So... if you go out on a little bit safer of a setup, sometimes
yeah, absolutely. Or it rains, or someone oils the track down, and you lose sessions, or
yep,
yeah,
you lose that awesome session, and then it's gone, and you're chasing that time the rest of the weekend, and you can never get there.
Yep, that's that it. So, what event do you guys have your eyes on at this point? I know things are a little uncertain now, but I guess let's say Let's say next week, the world goes back to normal. What did you guys have planned?
So we have. So
the world goes back to. So I got to ask a question here. Sorry, Chris, to interrupt. The world goes back to normal, or they say everything's open for business, because those are two different things. If they say everything's open for business,
I don't blame you. I mean, I feel like at the racetrack, we can make it pretty safe. It's not like we're sitting in the car with each other, but. Still, just getting down here and or wherever the event is, I mean, it's tough.
It seemed tough for us because the borders are closed. So it's, even if we wanted to, it's like we can't even really make the trip yet. And hopefully those, open up soon. But I mean, for myself, I really had my eye on Road Atlanta this year. I was really hopeful to kind of be able to go back there with a car that was well sorted. And, we had the GTX 35 on the car last year, which was awesome, but we gave up a lot of that area into the curve and the car became a lot harder to drive. And it was very, peaky in terms of how the power came in. So going back to that G30, a little bit smaller of a turbo, hopefully kind of getting more of that area under the curve. I was hoping to be able to kind of pick up quite a bit more time, versus what we did last year. And that's a track that I've just kind of had on my list for a while where it's like, I have a time in my mind and I just really want to run that time. And I won't be able to stop until I do. So that was kind of the top one on my list. And then obviously, the whole Grid Life series, we had, Gingerman, Midwest Festival, and Mid-Ohio and, all those events, which, definitely looking forward to.
Yeah, it seems like, obviously, you guys both have cars that are fast everywhere, but at Road Atlanta, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but looking at video, it looked like your cars both really shine there. So it's a shame. Looks like that might not happen.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, they moved the event to July 4th weekend, which, on paper sounds unbelievable with Formula Drift. Like the event can really be amazing. Hopefully we get a chance to actually do it. I have a love-hate relationship with Road Atlanta. It's one of those tracks, I really enjoy the events there. But from a time attack perspective, it's not my favorite track because it is such a high risk. The risk reward there is difficult to play with sometimes. You make a small mistake there and it generally means you're going to eat a wall and, you're going to lose your car. Whereas, you know, you go to Gingerman or, you know, even Button Willow and some of these other tracks, and it's like, you can really drive, you know, 100% all the time. And, you know, the risk factor is always there, but it's a lot lower than that, than, you know, versus like a track like Road Atlanta.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Some of the other ones we go to.
So, for myself, you know, I Grid Life Midwest Festival at Gingerman is just, to me, hard to beat. Just the vibe there. The people and the event and the parties, you know, after hours and stuff like that is just a great time. And the fact that that's, you know, getting rescheduled to October is a bummer. But, you know, happy that I think that October is probably reasonable to still have it. I mean, it's I think that anyone guessing too much at this time is yeah. You know, kind of foolish, because at this point, who knows, right? Like, you know, cases are still going up, you know, every week, every day. It's really hard to say kind of where we're going to be in a couple of months, but we can still be hopeful. I try not to get too political, but you know, with Georgia kind of opening for business in air quotes again on Friday, I worry that is, you know, could be detrimental to Road Atlanta event happening in July, but we'll have
to. Did you manage to lock down the Paella sponsorship again for this year, or like what's going on with that?
I wonder if they'll be there in October. That'll be like a pumpkin spice latte sponsorship.
Man. Well, I still haven't been out to a Grid Life festival at Gingerman, and it's definitely on my to-do list. Every time I hear about it from people, they just, you know, rave about how awesome it is, and it sounds like kind of the upscale version of what we used to do at Grand Bend, where we would go and hang out for the whole weekend and everybody would stay up all night and have a good time. So hopefully I'll get to make it out to that.
What about Colorado for you? They have the big festival at Colorado now.
So that would actually be pretty far, but that one apparently is going to be like a really big event. So, I mean, for me with car this year, I was thinking I'd love to do Coda Road Atlanta and then that Colorado event, but I haven't really tried to nail down any dates. Yeah. I've been trying to keep the whole thing casual, and then with the virus now, it's everything's just out the window. So I figure I'll do what I can, try to have my car ready when things start to open back up, and then we'll see.
Would that be 20 hours?
No, I think it was like 14, I want to say.
Oh, that wouldn't be so bad, because I would it was about 26 for us, okay, from our place, Dakota. So I imagine it'd be
gotcha. Okay.
Or
yeah.
Something like
yeah.
that to Gingerman. If I had to guess. But you know, depending on your schedule, that could be kind of maybe that would be three events if July were to happen at Road Atlanta, August at
Colorado, yeah, October. Sure, sounds nice. Let me know if you have any sponsors looking to sponsor anybody to help me get to all of them. But yeah,
no kidding. You don't,
man.
Need
if yeah. if yeah. I could carry the amount of fuel that thing drains in that car, I would think about it. But it's you know, I go out, I do an out lap, a hot lap, and then I come in, and I've burned usually around 5-6 gallons just doing that. Sorry. Yeah. So sorry, if I do like a slow out lap, a hot lap, and I usually run like 6-7 gallons through the thing. So yeah, just trying to carry the fuel. I mean, I basically have to bring 2 full drums of fuel to do a weekend, and I'm only doing like 2 laps a session. So, yeah.
Unbelievable.
That would be hilarious to see, you know, people coming into Gingerman like Miatas with their tire carrier trailers behind you. And you, because Gingerman is sometimes like a 4-day weekend.
And nothing else, just that. Just fuel.
Drums of fuel behind the yeah. GTR.
Yeah, fortunately with that car, yeah, I pretty else. Much just show up and it fuel. Usually just works. So that's been nice, but yeah, definitely drinks a lot of fuel.
Jeez, that's crazy. Well, I mean, we're kind of making that kind of power on a V6. I mean, I'm not super surprised. Even on our cars, like they're definitely not econo boxes anymore. They're, you know, we burn quite a bit of fuel pretty quickly. So it's kind of one of those things you want to make horsepower.
That's it. It's miles per gallon. That's all I'm worried about.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I wanted to thank you for joining us. I know we didn't get to cover everything that we wanted to talk about, so I think we'd probably like to have you come back on and talk a little bit more about, you know, some of your history and talk a little bit more about some of the things you have going on in the future. So hopefully we can have you back on the show, you know, in a little bit. Hopefully when things calm back down and get a little bit more back to normal and.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to talk to you guys anytime.
Well, thanks so much for having us or being a guest, Mike. It's been fantastic. And we actually, Chris and I discussed having you on when we were doing the initial show a couple of years ago, and we just never got never made it happen.
Thanks again. Great to talk to you guys. Love to do it again. And stay safe in the meantime. Be well. And hopefully I'll actually get to see you guys in person at the racetrack before too long.
I hope so, man. I hope so.
You too.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
Bye-bye.